Now, it's a common denominator among these pictures. We'll take them one at a time here. So take a good, hard, long look and see if you can picture what is missing from this picture. Now, that may not be a whole lot of information to go off of. We'll go to the next one. Once again, we have a common denominator missing from each one of these pictures. And finally, the third one. Does anyone have any guesses before we go ahead on what is missing from these pictures?
People.
People? Yep, that true, not the right answer, but anyone else?
Sunshine.
Sunshine? Interesting thought. A couple others, just shout them out.
Life, animals.
All right, well, I'm not going to tell you what's missing yet. So you can just stick that in the back pocket and just think about that for a few more minutes. This morning we're looking at the Transfiguration. We read it earlier in a passage. But to really grasp the events of what happened in that moment on that mountain, we need to go back a few thousand years before to the garden to really understand the truth of what happened in that moment on that mountain. In the garden, Adam and Eve disobeyed God by putting their own preferences, their own desires, ahead of what God had laid out for them. Because of this act of defiance, this act of sin, the fabric and nature of the world itself changed. There's physical changes that took place to the earth itself. The ground would no longer produce crops and fruit on its own as easily. There's physical changes for Adam and Eve that childbearing would no longer be the same. But there was also a number of spiritual changes. The most obvious and the most dynamic one of these is that Adam and Eve would now live in a world where they no longer saw God face to face. Up until this point, up until this moment, they'd have the opportunity to run into God in the garden, just like any one of us do this morning or at the grocery store, and be able to face to face have a dialogue conversation with their Creator. Now, Adam and Eve, after this moment, after the punishments came into effect, they began to live in a new reality that was completely different than the one that they were created to live in. Adam and Eve now exist in a world that was not intended for them to ever live in the way it was. And in the story that comes in Mark chapter 9, Jesus takes these three disciples up a mountain, and something amazing happens. In that moment, they get to experience God in the presence and capacity in which they did in the garden. In that moment, they come to a face-to-face presentation of Jesus himself as if he were in heaven. They see people who have been dead for a long time, and they recognize them as who they are. In that moment, it's almost as if God had taken the world as an orange and peeled back the layers to show them what was really, truly behind. The reality is that we live in an existence that takes place in two places. The physical world that we see, that we experience on a day. And then there's the spiritual world that is happening all around us that we don't necessarily see the physical signs and events of. But it is just as important and just as relevant to us, even though we can't see it. The Transfiguration is an experience that takes place in a perfect balance of these two worlds, the physical world and the spiritual world. God put these men in a moment where they saw the world as he saw it, where they met with the Lord face to face. Now, the disciples' response in this moment was confusion, and that is understandable. I mean, normally I'm pretty hard on the disciples of, come on, guys, you're like with Jesus, like in this moment. You should be figuring out this pretty clearly. But this experience was so overwhelming, so shocking to the system. It was so much to grasp that the disciples missed pretty much everything of importance that happened in that moment. People appeared. Moses and Elijah just suddenly appeared among them. And what I find most interesting is they knew who they were. They were given an understanding and a perspective that they recognized these men who had died generations before them for who they were. And they know in that moment that something drastic is happening here. In that moment, they hear God's voice, an audible voice, something that has only happened in a few times in the New Testament scriptures, where Jesus says to them that this is my son. And Jesus himself, his appearance drastically changed. He became this image of white, whiter than, as the scripture says, that anything could be dyed, whiter than the most natural white thing that existed in creation. They caught a glimpse of almost what Jesus' resurrection body would have been like. They caught a glimpse of Jesus in God's presence. And this actually makes a whole lot of sense, because when Moses met the Lord on Mount Sinai, he would catch a look of the Lord and he would be so overwhelmed with the visual of seeing God that when he came down to the mountain from the mountain, they would have to wrap up his face in clothes and cloth, because it would be, his face would literally be shining with the reflection of God's glory. That it was so bright it could not be directly looked at. And in that moment, Jesus takes on that same physical presence. So the question is, what does the transfiguration mean? There have been books, there have been sermon series, there have been men far smarter than I am trying to boil it down to a few different principles. The first thing that we can draw from it is that there was a lot of symbolism taking place. Symbolism that had links to Old Testament events, that had links to different things about God and his character. That God appeared in the presence of a cloud. We've seen that before within the Israelites being led through the wilderness. That Jesus' physical form changed to a color of white, representing the purity and holiness of God. That comes from being in God's presence. And that they met Moses and Elijah themselves. Talking about the entire Old Testament being summarized, that's the Law and the Prophets right there. The two most popular figureheads of Old Testament history, side by side, standing with Jesus. The second thing that happened is that we see this affirmation of the historical journey that the Israelites, the Jewish nation, has been on. That we are bringing together in this moment the law that defines the Jewish people, the prophets, some of the most influential teaching about who God is, and this need to turn to him. And then we have Jesus himself. That for these disciples, God is drawing a roadmap that this is where we started, this is where we went, and now this is where we are. And in this, God confirms the identity of Jesus. He confirms that this is not just a teacher. This is not just a great man who has done miraculous things. But he says, in very much an echo to the same moment of his baptism, he's confirming for those disciples who Jesus really is. Beyond the former carpenter, this is who you stand in the presence of. And he confirms that this is the fulfillment of prophecy, Elijah having come before and now Jesus being here. God is trying to affirm for these three men something specific, and he's trying to give them time and an opportunity to digest it before the events that are to come through Jesus' death and resurrection. God is trying to affirm his redemption plan. This is God giving a final recap that this is all building towards one event and one place. And it's through Jesus that the redemption comes from, that this restoration of a relationship with God that dates all the way back to Adam and Eve disobeying God. This is the moment in which that plan will be coming together. God's redemptive plan is so near completion that he's reminding those who were closest to Jesus of the journey that it took to get them where they are. And he's giving them an opportunity to see the big picture while there's still time. The second thing that God is doing is he's not only affirming his plan, but he is preparing advocates. He is showing these disciples and telling them verbally that this is my son, so that they may be prepared to advocate, to share, and to tell others the truth of who Jesus actually was when the time comes. God has given them all the information in little bits and places and stories and illustrations. Jesus has taught them and hinted and said, this is what's going to happen. They have not got it. And in this moment, all the blinders are removed. All the cobwebs are pulled out of the eyes. And the disciples see in a moment exactly who Jesus was and where this is all going. Now, coming down from the mountain, they still didn't really grasp what was about to happen, that Jesus would die. And that's understandable because hindsight is such an amazing thing to bring into perspective all of these events. But this moment is the equivalent in a story of the heroes getting their final commission or their final task before their journey begins. Jesus pulls these disciples aside and says, so you know, this is what's really happening right now. And although they didn't get it because they had this image that Jesus would be high priest and king, it's an event that gave the disciples the courage and the framework to operate in faith and understanding after Jesus had left. Now, hold on that next slide for a second. At the beginning, I gave you a number of pictures and asked you what was missing from each one of those pictures. And although you guys guessed a number of things that were true and accurate, there's something bigger and something even more central and more principal that you drastically missed about all of those pictures. Can we get the next slide? It's color. These photos have been digitally altered to remove as much as possible of the primary color that's written in the white letters. There is no red in that underwater picture. There is no blue in the forest picture and no green in the desert. And you all missed it. I would have missed it too. I mean, but it goes to show us how when we're not looking for the right things, we can totally miss the most obvious things that are standing right in front of us. How when we've got our minds set and geared towards looking at things a certain way or approaching a problem from a certain angle, we can be blindsided by the most basic of things. But it's an amazing picture of how important context is to understanding what's actually happening to us. In reality, as humans, there's a gaping hole in our lives of what we need and what we have. And this need is only truly, completely made whole through the presence of God in our lives. Although we may never see God physically doing things, and maybe there's moments in your lives where you have genuinely had an experience where you catch a glimpse of that spiritual side. I've heard stories all my life of someone who says something behind someone and they turn around to just miss getting hit by a car, or someone who provides someone something, whether it be a word on a train, about an opportunity. We may catch glimpses of these things that God is doing, of the words that he's giving us to encourage someone else in their walk. But we need to remind ourselves that it's almost as if when we look at the world, we are looking at it without one of the primary colors. It's very easy to get comfortable in our lives in the comforts that we have, that we forget that we are truly in a war that has eternal impact on us. There's a book that I love. It's entirely a fiction book, but it's about a spiritual war taking place in this one city. And the book is written in such a way that the characters, the humans in the story, have no idea what's going on around them. But every action that's taken, every event that occurs, there's a spiritual effect in that city around it. And they talk about how when the community is literally at church, standing, worshiping together in God, how angels are standing on the outside of that building, preventing anything evil from entering that space, so that God can be worshipped. And it's a little bit of a fantasy story, but what I love about it is that these people are literally oblivious to the spiritual war that is happening around them at all times. But I think that's really the reality that we live in. We live in a place where good and evil in their most pure forms are struggling and fighting over one another for control and influence over us. But we don't see it. I don't see it. I don't walk around seeing angels standing outside of buildings or people who are struggling with literal demons in their lives. But we have to be reminded to live in the light of what we don't see. We have to remind ourselves constantly, each and every day, that we look at the world and we're missing something central. And we have to live as if every single action that we take, prayer that we give, or encouragement that we make has a literal physical effect in the kingdom work that is going on around us. We have to live knowing that everything that we do has a kingdom impact. In that moment when those disciples came to the top of the mountain, God for them showed exactly the stakes of what was at risk for the future generations. He gave them a glimpse into eternity in a very real, inarguable way that they would know who Jesus was. Now we, having the benefit of scriptures looking back over this generations later, we may not need such physical events to remind us or encourage us. But we do need reminders. And we do need to be living and encouraging each other, knowing that we are still at war and knowing that God is still working amongst us. Jesus showed his disciples that it's all real. That there was more than you could ever think or realize or hope. And that God had a plan that at that point had not yet happened, so that all would be saved and spared by coming back into the whole relationship with God that was always intended. The disciples saw God in that moment. Moses saw God on top of that mountain. And although we may not see him, we know that he is real. And that we are blessed to be able to look back at all the events through Scripture, at all of the things that have happened to each other that we share. And it's our responsibility to live in this world, knowing that there is a whole other side of it that we can't see. But we need to live as if our life depends on it. Because it truly does. Because salvation can only come through God alone. And that's a gift that we have that we need to share. So, Stephen, we're going to have you and the singers, if they're around, to come back, and we are going to sing about where this truly takes place and where this was all accomplished as we prepare for the Easter season, knowing that it was at the cross that Christ accomplished this for me and for you.